From the land to Grand Hue University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 23rd day of May, 2022. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel. He's at Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. Chad Hart, Iowa State Extension Agricultural Economist based in Ames, will join us to take up the commodity markets and his view of the seasonal trends at this time of the year and how the fundamentals are playing into those at the moment. And then as we wrap up our time together, we'll take a look at the weather forecast too. Mark Russo will be here from Everstream Analytics to discuss the Corn Belt, the northwestern part of the Corn Belt through the Canadian prairies, and what's been happening in Western Europe, all on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Medium. It is public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
July corn today up 7.5 cents. It settled at $7.86 1/4. September 7.54 3/4. 7 3/4 higher. In December up 7 cents at $7.39. Bean futures were lower. July contract at 16.87, down 18 1/4. August at 16.28 3/4, down 13. And November beans 3 lower at $15.18 3/4 for the new crop. Bean meal futures down $7.40. The bean oil 46 cents lower. July wheat futures up 21 1/4 for the soft red at $11.90 and the hard red at $12.76 1/2, up 23 3/4 cents. Live cattle futures finished at $132.97 1/2, up $1.42 1/2. Feeders at $165.62 1/2, $1.70 higher after the USDA reports on Friday for the cattle on feed numbers. Lean hogs at $110.85, up $1.85. Crude oil now trading 16 cents lower at $110.13 a barrel. Diesel fuel or heating oil up 2 7/10 at $3.64 9/10. And the wholesale price of gasoline just about unchanged at $3.68 3/10 per gallon. We're now joined by Kurt Kimmel. He's at Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois to discuss the marketplace for the day. Happy Monday to you, Kurt.
Well, good afternoon, Todd. Yes, another Monday, a mixed Monday, in fact.
Well, tell me why it was mixed. Why it was corn up and the soybean down?
Seems there continues to be some spread activity when we're not seeing some big news items. Today they were selling beans, buying corn, selling beans, buying wheat. Complete opposite of what we saw into last week. Fundamentally, the beans kind of took it on the chin a little bit here. There was comments out of the Biden administration that the U.S. would put troops in Taiwan, and shoot, China didn't take that very positive, I don't think. And then, two, there was talk of maybe lowering the import tariffs, Chinese import tariffs, and everybody's scratching their heads like, where are we on this trade policy? Giving in or caving into a country like that kind of put some uncertainty in the marketplace. And with the world situation going on, beans kind of back and filled here. The thing on the bean complex, if you look at the daily price charts, the July futures made a new high and closed lower. The concerning thing is the meal. The meal made a new high and closed, you know, at or below the previous day's lows. And even the soybean oil made a little higher here and closed lower. So we'll have a little hook reversals to the downside. So hopefully those commodities will hang in there. But I wouldn't give up on the beans completely, particularly the July beans. Visiting with the elevators around, there's a lot of talk that these elevators are going to be out of beans here in about another 30 days. So there's not a whole lot of available supplies here as we move into the last part of summer. But we don't want to see the commercial end user step up and say, well, we're going to take some downtime too. So continued a lot of moving parts. If you sit back and look at the chart there, we're still in a sideways pattern. Hopefully we're not seeing some head and shoulders tops take place here. Corn-wise, cash corn bids remain firm. There's some corn out there yet, but for the most part, everyone wants to kind of hang on to what they have in their hands. So we'll see how long that takes place. Planting progress report, you're going to see another good jump here. Ranges all over the place. You got to remember these numbers kind of lag a little bit, and it's going to come down to that last 10-15% in some of these wetter areas. But corn progress, I've seen estimates anywhere from 65 to 70% complete as a nation. Most are just under 70, and on the soybeans, anywhere from 50 to 55% complete as a nation. Wheat-wise, we saw some strength in wheat here. Talk maybe a little cool weather in some spots there. Then, two, just uncertainty on the wheat market here as we look at that Ukraine situation. You got to keep in mind, we're going to continue to have some extreme volatility in these markets, and there's going to be, you know, a lot of uncertainty, especially with Russia denying to allow exports coming out of that country. The average person's got to realize this is war, and they're not going to play by the books. And the scary part is, Todd, the scary part is if you go back to people in these mindsets, when Iraq invaded Kuwait, they did the same thing, destroyed stuff, not totally, but raped and pillaged and everything else. And when the U.S. started coming, they hightailed it out there. But if you remember, they had the mindset, if we can't have this oil, we're going to blow it up. And every oil well set on fire. So what happens here? We're fresh in there. If they don't get their way, this wheat gets ripe, ready, dried out. All of a sudden, if we can't have the wheat, we're going to nuke it and set it on fire. So there's a lot of interesting things that could unfold here as we move forward.
Well, we will be watching closely to see what Russia does and how Ukraine reacts and is able to hold on over the next several months. The Taiwan-China-U.S. comment was an interesting one by the president over the weekend. And as you said, that had an impact in the marketplace, though the administration and the White House backing out of that to some extent for the day. It did take away from the trade policies that the Biden administration was working to put into place today. I do want to talk about some of the fundamentals. Speaking of trade, as it relates to the soybean, what is coming out of Brazil can come out of Brazil and for China, that is, and what the expectations might be going into the fall if there's not a very good planting base in the northwestern Corn Belt, and particularly in North Dakota, related to soybean, of course, and what that might mean, if anything.
Yeah, as far as that northwest, that's a lot of, I guess a new term now is a lot of balloons up in the air on that. It's going to be a situation where these acres are still a moving target. Hopefully the June acreage report will shed a little light on it, but we're going to be to the point that, you know, we won't have any accurate numbers for quite some time. Not only soybeans, but spring wheat, and there's quite a bit of advantage with prevent plant and so forth, but we'll see how that unfolds. But the southern hemisphere, they're pretty well booked up, sold out for the most part. I know Argentina, you know, the last batch, we're looking at some very, very dry conditions there, so the beans will be pretty well spoken for or done with out of the southern hemisphere. So we're in the next available market to come to. And vacuously, you know, our bean exports, you know, much better than what the trade was watching before. You know, the next market maker, of course, would be the new crop beans. And we'll can probably continue to see some demand come as. On the news wire there this morning, there was talk that Egypt bought 130,000 tons of U.S. beans. And I've never heard of Egypt buying U.S. beans before.
The cattle on feed report I mentioned as we started our program, that came out on Friday afternoon. What did it show, and does it make much of a difference?
Well, cattle on feed, I mean, we had the report, and the numbers were there. You know, when you look at the cattle on feed, it's just below 199%. Marketing's 102%, so we moved some fasting through there. The weight breakdowns, you know, how long are these guys going to feed high-priced grain, the inputs there? That's going to be something to watch. But the main thing is consumer confidence and consumer demand. When you look at the cattle, you know, we've been talking about pork loins and pork chops for some time, but, man, we're going to have to watch these ribeyes, because as the consumer maybe shifts from higher-cut meats to lower-cut meats or more burger and so forth, as their budgets become tight, it's going to be time to load up some ribeyes in the freezer, Todd.
Hey, thank you much. I appreciate it.
You bet. Take care.
That is Kurt Kimmel. He is with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. You can find them online at batescom.net, or you can always hear him again on our own website at willag.org. That's willag.org. In today's agricultural news, we'll start in Indiana, where the Secretary of Agriculture was on hand yesterday to welcome the first military air shipment of infant formula. Rod Bain from the United States Department of Agriculture reports.
Sound Sunday from Operation Fly Formula, a mission vital to transport specific infant formula products needed for critical medical purposes. Such products currently in shortage in the U.S., along with other infant formulas, after a voluntary recall. Its importance emphasized by U.S. military involvement, with the first pallets of Nestle-based products made in Switzerland transported to Ramstad Air Force Base in Germany for flight on an Air Force C-17 jet arriving in Indianapolis, Indiana. Welcoming this first flight this weekend, Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack.
This shipment provides enough formula to take care of 9,000 babies and 18,000 toddlers.
Additional military shipment flights are scheduled in coming days to address infant formula shortages in both medical facilities and retail stores. The secretary added military involvement is expected to speed up formula delivery from 2 weeks to a matter of days. I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
Speaking of USDA, last week the agency held a special online meeting, which anybody could attend, related to the fundamentals of the marketplace. They talked a great deal about Ukraine. Theft, war, and damage, of course, are complicating the exports from that nation and further squeezing tight world grain supplies and fueling food inflation. The world grain stocks problem starts this year in Ukraine, according to USDA World Ag Outlook Board Chair Mark Jackanowski.
Could some of those stocks be basically taken by Russia and shipped back to Russia and enter the world market through those means? Or how much of the stocks that, you know, that we assume are remaining in country might have been damaged because of the war itself?
And even if stored or new grain can get out of the country by land, the volumes can't come close to shipments out of Ukraine's Black Sea ports that are blocked by Russia. Meantime, India has banned its wheat exports. And former USDA chief economist Joe Glauber, now at the International Food Research Policy Institute, otherwise known as IFPRI, says it doesn't mean that there won't be wheat out of India or out of Ukraine. In fact, Glauber says those dependent on Ukraine can get wheat and other supplies, but the cost has gone up as much as 40%.
North Africa, Middle East, Central Asia, all of those are seeing higher prices for wheat products. And, you know, it's not lost on people that that's where the Arab Spring was, the food riots.
And Glauber says no one knows how long the war will last. Media reports say Russia's already threatening to annex parts of southern Ukraine. Meantime, the U.S., EU, and the United Nations are stepping up humanitarian aid to stave off a food crisis that could see millions go hungry or starve this fall. And finally today, USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service, or NAS, will mail the Conservation Practice Adoption Motivation Survey beginning May the 30th. The new survey is a joint project between NAS and USDA's Natural Resources Conservation Service, the NRCS, aimed at better understanding conservation practice adoption and the role of technical and financial assistance. The survey results will be used to guide the implementation of NRCS programs in the future. Now, there are two versions of the survey this year, one requesting information on crop conservation practices and one for confined livestock conservation practices. If NAS does not receive producers' completed surveys by June the 13th, they may reach out to schedule telephone interviews. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, agricultural economist at Iowa State Extension. Chad Hart now joins us to take a look at what's been happening in the commodity markets. Hi, Chad. Thank you for being with us today.
Oh, it's my pleasure to be with you today.
I'm wondering, at these high levels and this particular time of year, as planting usually begins to wrap up, if there is anything in the marketplace that farmers should consider, old or new crop.
Well, I think if we're looking right now, I fall back on a lot of, okay, you know, we're worried about weather conditions and things like that. But when you think back, you know, to in any given year, the idea is that we are in that period of time now when we tend to see our seasonal highs. And you're right. Whereas we're starting to wrap up planting, this is a time where we do tend to see prices tend to sag a bit because, you know, as we're getting that crop in the ground, there's the potential for the those larger crops. And so what this always reminds me is to remind farmers to look at the marketing opportunities they've got today. Because in any given year, the seasonal patterns will tell us these tend to be the best prices we'll see throughout the year. And so it's a good time to at least evaluate what the market is offering you right now and figure out how much you want to dive into that.
That's for corn and soybeans. Are they both in that same particular place at this time, do you think?
They both are. If you look back at the 40-year average, corn tends to hit a little, you know, hit that peak a little earlier, beans a little later, which makes sense. It aligns with, if you will, the planting windows we see for both crops. But it is this period of time, I describe it between Mother's Day and Father's Day, where you do tend to see the seasonal price peak for both crops.
And then we wait at that point to see what the weather looks like in July?
Yep. And if you think about it, what we tend to see are if, you know, weather conditions are good, prices will sag. If we're staying a little drier or a little too wet, we'll hang on to more of these prices that we see coming out of the late springtime.
Do fundamentals play a unique or different role this year than in previous years?
I would argue they do just because of the concerns we have when we look at the global supply and demand situation. I think between the combination of, you know, the war in Ukraine and the worries about supplies coming out of the Black Sea region, the issues with Malaysia and Indonesia as they're looking at the palm oil market, I think we're seeing a lot more pressure globally. And what that means is that we focus more on the fundamentals here on looking at, okay, what's the hard supply that we've got of the crop, but also what is that demand structure look like as we're moving here into the summertime?
I suppose it doesn't mean that the seasonals won't be in play, but that maybe there is a higher bottom than usual.
Yeah. And if you think back to last year, for example, what we saw was the sort of a seasonal price peak last April, May, June, but then prices tailed off, but not by much because there was such strong international demand for crops moving through time. And I think we'll see that same sort of pattern reflected this year because of not only demand remaining good, but like I say, global supplies being so tight right now.
If Ukraine is able to find a supply route, does that change things very much?
It does somewhat, because if you think about it, the idea is that Ukraine is a major producer of wheat and of corn, and if they can get some sunflower going there, and so they have the ability to impact several crop markets at once if they can get supplies out and moving.
And finally, I'd be amiss if I didn't ask you how things were going in your area as it relates to farmers putting crop in the ground for this season.
Well, I was going to say, we got off to a rocky start, but the last couple of weeks have been really good as far as catching up. I think what it does do, though, is given that we're planting in such, if you will, a narrow window, what I am worried about is looking forward is that means we're also looking at narrow weather windows as we're coming towards pollination. And so we'll be more weather sensitive here in Iowa than we are in a normal year.
And what did the cattle on feed report tell you, if anything?
I'm going to say that what it told me is, you know, two stories. I'm looking at one Iowa centric versus when I'm looking nationwide. When I'm looking nationwide, we see this herd shrinking quite a bit, and it does lead to lower beef supplies as we're looking out into 2023. Iowa was one of the few states where we actually saw some growth in the industry, and so I think that also shows that this industry is reshaping itself to basically line up to where the feed is right now.
Hey, thank you.
Thank you.
Chad Hart is an agricultural economist at Iowa State University based in Ames, joined us on this Monday afternoon. Let's check in now with Mark Russo, as we usually do on Mondays, to take a look at the weather forecast. He's with Everstream Analytics. Hi, Mark. Thanks for being with us. Can you start in the Midwest? It's a gorgeous day today. Yesterday was really pretty nice as well. Farmers have done a lot of work. I'm wondering what the next week might look like for the Corn Belt.
Well, Todd, all in all here, the outlook for the remainder of planting looks pretty decent across much of the Corn Belt. I guess compared to yesterday, the forecast for the Western Midwest has trended just a little more active. But again, a lot of work has been taking place, and it doesn't look like any kind of real wet pattern that would bog things down. And at the same time, actually, the Eastern Midwest looks a little bit better today compared to how it looked like yesterday, with more open days and just all in all here, just less kind of major widespread rain events here coming through. So that should lead to continued, favorable progress here and help to make up some ground after, what's been a slow start, up until a couple weeks ago.
Farmers in North Dakota and parts of Minnesota into the Canadian prairies been able to move much?
Not much, especially in North Dakota, Manitoba, and southeast Saskatchewan. That's really been the wettest area in all of North America from a crop belt standpoint in the past 4 to 5 weeks. They are going to be improving. The pattern there is also turning less active. Now, they are going to be unseasonably cool for a few days, but then even readings warm up there over the weekend and next week. So they're in a better mode here, and that is badly needed to allow more of the crops to be planted.
We've been watching very closely what's been taking place in Europe, France, and Germany in particular, as it's related to the winter wheat crop there. What are conditions like today?
Yeah, conditions are improving in portions of Western Europe, especially in France, which has been one of the driest wheat producing countries so far this spring. Now, this window of opportunity for France is coming to an end over the next couple of days. So that is providing some relief, but then a drier pattern will return to the region late this week and actually continues into the early portion of June as well. Now, with a kind of drier bias still continuing, one thing that is coming to an end across actually much of Western Europe is this record-setting heat. In fact, we've seen record temperatures since late last week across the region, and now a pretty strong cold front is moving through and helping to end that heat there in Western Europe.
I know, because you're in our part of the world, they're located near Chicago. You probably have looked out to the Memorial Day weekend. Do you have an early forecast for how things will be Saturday, Sunday, Monday?
Yeah, all in all here, it's looking like actually a pretty seasonal Memorial Day weekend across a good chunk here of the Corn Belt. And right now it's looking like actually mostly dry conditions much of the weekend, with then seasonal temperatures, which again, we've been a bit of a roller coaster ride with temperatures of late, but a bit more stability looks to be settling in as we go into and throughout the holiday weekend.
Hey, thank you, and you have a great Memorial Day. I'll talk to you in a couple of weeks.
Sounds great, Todd.
That's Mark Russo. He is with Everstream Analytics. Joined us on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. Find us online. Listen to us on demand at willag.org, willag.org. The theme song for the Closing Market Report is written and performed by Logan County, Illinois farmer Tim Gleason. You have a great afternoon. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.